Well, good afternoon, everyone. Those of you that just attended the session before this in this very same room, I'm not sure there's that many familiar faces, so yeah, a little bit of overlap in information, but hopefully not too much. I am talking about the same data set. Guttmacher recently conducted our first longitudinal study, and one of the things we were struck by, you know, typically researchers of sexual health use cross-sectional data, and we've just been really struck by how much all of these indicators we use all the time change, and so that's what I wanted to use my 12 to 15 minutes to talk to you about. Again, most of the research data set that we use is cross-sectional in nature, but there are some instances where, for example, the National Survey of Family Growth tries to collect, or does collect, retrospective calendar data and asking women and maybe even men, you know, for each month of the past 6 months, 12 years, up to 4 years, did you have sex and what contraceptive methods did you use? And they're not easy data to work with, but the researchers that have done it, the findings suggest that there's a lot of movement going on. There's a lot of changing of methods. There's a lot of discontinuation. But something you can't really capture even in these kind of retrospective calendars are the extent to which people's motivation to avoid pregnancy or desire to get pregnant change over time. And so we see that as being one of the big contributions of the study that we did, because to date there are no prospective studies of pregnancy intentions and fertility attitudes coming from a national sample of women in the United States. A little bit about how we collected the data. The stuff I'm going to present today comes from the first three waves of the continuity and change in contraceptive use study. We collected data at three points in time over a 12-month period. So baseline was November of 2012. We followed up with them in May, June of 2013, and then November, December of 2013. So baseline 6 and 12 months. We went with Knowledge Networks to administer the survey, and it was an online survey. I wanted to assure people that Knowledge Networks uses an address-based sampling strategy. So they randomly select thousands of households and ask them to be part of their knowledge panel. And when they approach a household to do this, if the household doesn't have internet access or a computer, GFK provides it free of charge, so overcoming you know, the underrepresentation of those groups that you would get in other types of SurveyMonkey type thing. So it is a much more rigorous survey procedure, online survey procedure, than, again, when we do SurveyMonkey or those other types of things that we do. So our study, we were interested in looking at contraceptive use patterns, and of course for that you need women at risk of unintended pregnancy. So for our baseline survey, we had four screening criteria. We restricted it to women between the ages of 18 and 39, women who were not pregnant at baseline, women who had had vaginal sex with a man at least once in their lives, and we also screened out women who had had a tubal ligation or whose main male sexual partner had had a vasectomy. A little bit of information about our response rate and attrition. So in November, December of 2012, Knowledge Networks asked 11,365 women between the ages of 18 and 39 to participate in the study. We did also offer women $10 for participating in it. Of those 11,000, 6,658, or 59%, agreed to at least answer the screening items. We screened out a substantial number of those, so our final baseline sample is 4,647 women. So 6 months later, we went back to those 4,600 women and asked them to fill out a second survey. 69% of them did. And then 6 months later, we went back to those 3,200 women and asked them to participate in the Wave 3 survey. 75% did. So just something to be aware of is that, you know, a substantial amount of attrition that occurred from baseline to times three, or of the women who participated in the baseline survey, 52% participated at times two and three, and the information I'm going to present is restricted to women who participated in all three surveys. Survey content, it was actually, the survey itself only took most women about 10 to 12 minutes to fill out, covered issues of sexual activity and contraceptive use, covered pregnancy intentions and fertility intentions and pregnancy attitudes, asked about relationship issues, access to healthcare and family planning services, and exposure to disruptive life events. In the interest of time today, I'm only going to focus on these first two issues. Oh, and then also just to acknowledge that our sample, even our baseline sample, was a little bit biased. That when we compared the demographic profile of our baseline sample to the National Survey of Family Growth, limiting it to 18 to 39, not sterilized, et cetera, that our sample appeared to be a little bit older, a little bit more educated, a little wider, and more married. So overall, just a more privileged or advantaged sample than what we would see nationally. So again, that's something to keep in mind when we're looking at the findings. So first off, one of the things that we were, again, something we didn't necessarily anticipate being kind of sidetracked by, but so a lot of our analyses when we're looking at contraceptive use, we limit it to women at risk of unintended pregnancy. Well, so first off, we said, well, who are women at risk of unintended pregnancy, and how does that change over time? So how we typically define unintended pregnancy or risk of unintended pregnancy is women who are not trying to get pregnant, who are not pregnant or postpartum, and who have had sex in the last 30 days. And interestingly, we found, well, actually, this doesn't necessarily show all the change that we found. So at each survey, at each point in time, 8% of women in the sample said that they were trying to get pregnant. Again, we screened out pregnant women, but by waves 2 and 3, 5 to 6% of the sample was pregnant or postpartum. And then we also saw an increase or a slight increase in the proportion of women who were not sexually active over the survey period. And I would say, you know, these two trends are not unrelated. That women who were pregnant or postpartum were less likely to be sexually active than women who were not pregnant or postpartum. So, you know, perhaps here is where we see the most amount of change, but these kind of similar proportions mask a fair amount of change that was going on. So, for example, even though 8% of women said they were trying to get pregnant at all three points, only 3% said they were trying to get pregnant at each point. Again, we didn't have any women that fit these criteria for pregnant or postpartum. Again, at any point, 1 in 5 women had not been sexually active. Only 11% of women were not sexually active at all three survey periods. Now, when we went into the analysis, you know, we kind of visualized we're going to get this really clean sample. We're going to limit our longitudinal analysis to women who are at risk of pregnancy at all three points in time. And that's where things got really messy. So only 8% of women said they were trying to get pregnant at any point, but 15%, almost twice as many, said at least during at least one survey period that they were trying to get pregnant. We had 10% of women who were pregnant or postpartum over the study period, and we had 1/3 of our sample that wasn't sexually active during at least one of the survey periods. And when you put all, you know, there is some overlap in these three categories, but we still had about, we would have lost about half of our sample if we would have removed women who were not sexually active at all three points in time. And again, this is a 12-month period. So when we do our, you know, when we use our cross-sectional data to look at who's at risk of unintended pregnancy and why, we don't realize all the change that's going on in those indicators for individual women. Now I'm going to limit the analysis to women who are at risk of unintended pregnancy, specifically here, weren't trying to get pregnant and were sexually active. So what we found is that at each point in time, somewhere between 72 and 67% of women at risk of unintended pregnancy expressed a strong desire to avoid pregnancy. And just to back up a little bit, how we measured this is we had an item that asked women, how important is it to you to avoid getting pregnant right now on a scale of 1 to 6? And anyone with 6 being very important. So anyone who said 5 to 6 was considered to have a strong pregnancy avoidance. And we found that 72 to 67% of women at each point in time had a strong pregnancy avoidance and then, you know, a parallel increase in a not strong pregnancy avoidance. But these seemingly similar proportions do mask some amount of change. So only 55% of women consistently said, of women at risk of unintended pregnancy, at least once, consistently said that they had a strong pregnancy avoidance. And again, we see a similar pattern with the not strong. So again, our whole purpose in going into this was to understand contraceptive use and patterns of change. And our main outcome of interest was actually consistent contraceptive use, in part because of some of this stuff that we found. So we did see, again, we screened out women and their partner, they or their partner were sterilized. But over the course of the year, 5% of women in the sample, they or their partner, had a sterilizing procedure. We saw similar proportions using long-acting reversible contraceptive methods, such as the IUD or the implant at each point. We saw a small decline, you know, perhaps because of the increase in sterilization, small declines in the proportions using these other popular methods, pill, condoms, or withdrawal. But we did find, if you look at who was using the same method at each point in time, that there was a little bit of variation. So perhaps not surprisingly, if a woman was using LARC at one point in time, she was using it at all the other points too, or most commonly, the overwhelming majority were. But among pill users, we saw a lower proportion who were using it at all 3 points of time, like weren't necessarily, again, we have this idea, I think, of women are just using these pills in perpetuity, taking it month after month, and that's not necessarily the case. And then perhaps not surprisingly, the proportion who were using coital-dependent methods at each point in time was substantially lower. And I do want to notice, if you're doing any kind of math in your head, you're like, that all adds up to more than 100%, and that's not even all the methods. One of the things that we found in this study is a substantial amount of overlapping use, hormonal methods with either condoms or withdrawal, and a lot of overlapping use within the last 30 days of condoms and withdrawal. So that's why those proportions add up that way. Oh, and then again, we have substantial minorities who were using a number of these methods at least once. Almost half of women in our sample used the pill during at least one survey, but again, most of them weren't using it on all 3 points. And again, substantial minorities of women using condoms or withdrawal during at least 1 point on the survey. Still, despite all this that's going on, we found that the overwhelming majority of women were using contraceptive methods consistently, 84% to 85% at each wave. And I believe this one is listed among women who were sexually active at all 3 points. It did drop a little bit there. 72% consistently used a contraceptive method over the study period. So for us, our analytic strategy had to change after we got the data in hand because of how much information, how many cases we would have lost. And it could potentially have implications for cross-sectional data. When we take this, one point in time slice and try to model costs and risks and all these other things, I don't think there's this recognition that what's happening right here in women's lives, we think that's what's happening at each month after that, and that's not obviously not the case, even in our sample of, again, seemingly kind of better off women leading more stable lives. And again, just recognizing that a lot of things change. Exposure to risk of unintended pregnancy changes, the desire to avoid pregnancy, even among women who aren't trying to get pregnant changes, and then not surprisingly, their contraceptive methods change as well. So I just wanted to acknowledge that this project was funded by JPB. Thank you for your attention. Stan, I'm so glad you asked that. We actually published an article on this in Contraception a couple of weeks ago. So we adopted used the strategy of Jennifer Barber's study, the Relationship Dynamics and Social Life Study. We first asked all women about using hormonal methods. And also just, I take up too much time, but rather than giving women this exhaustive list of 27 methods that haven't, some that haven't been used since the 1970s, we asked all women about 8 hormonal methods, whether they were using it for pregnancy prevention or not. Then we had questions about sexual activity, and if a woman said that she or her partner had used, if she had had sex with a man in the last 30 days, we said, did you and your partner use any of these methods? Withdrawal, condoms, natural family planning, some other barrier method. And we purposely put withdrawal first on the list because we wanted, I think a lot of people don't consider it to be a real method. And once they've checked off their real method, they move on. And our expectation is that withdrawal is used in rotation with or, with other methods. And so we thought by putting it first on the list, we would get more accurate reports. That's our hypothesis about why we had such high rates of that. And again, there's an article in Contraception that discusses it in more detail. Yeah, that's reassuring. And that was another thing, I guess I could have put it, that was another layer of complication of, like, things are changing, and contraceptive use is not one method that, again, women are using multiple methods, sometimes at the same time, sometimes in rotation with each other. It's just a lot messier than we like to acknowledge. Any other questions?